The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening and hello again, everybody. Welcome to Hour 1 of Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB, Freeport, Long Island, New York. Bill Donahue taking you through the first hour on this Sunday night, the ninth day of August, after which I'll hand it off to Raymond Mora for Hour number 2. Our engineer Brian Graves is across the way tonight. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. Up first, we'll welcome in the longtime manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers and a member of the Baseball Hall of Fame. The great Tommy Lasorda will join us. In the second half, we'll talk to 1969 world champion Miracle Met outfielder. He made that unbelievable catch off the bat of Brooks Robinson in the 1969 World Series out in right field at Shea Stadium. Ron Swoboda will be with us, so sit back, relax, enjoy Sports Talk 1240 tonight on WGBB. Got some great stuff ahead in the next few hours. As always, before we begin, I invite you to follow us on our Facebook page, cleverly titled Sports Talk 1240. There you'll find sports information, show information, and more. So stop by, give us a look. Then you can click and give us a like. You can also follow us on Twitter at Sports Talk 1240. And, of course, all past shows can be heard on our website at www.sportstalk1240.com. Well, all you daily sports fantasy players out there, Sports Talk 1240, we've teamed up with a new daily fantasy sports website called DraftPots.com. So go over there, register with the promo code SportsTalk1240, and you'll receive a free $5 credit to get you started. So that's DraftPots.com. Go over there, register with the promo code SportsTalk1240. You'll get a $5 credit, and you could continue with your daily fantasy sports that you guys enjoy so much. I have some bad news to report. Maybe you haven't heard about it yet. The death of the great Frank Gifford, sports broadcasting legend. Football Hall of Famer. We hope to talk about that a little bit later on. We're going to welcome in Tommy Lasorda in a little bit. We hope to talk about some of the Pro Football Hall of Fame inductees a little later on as well that were inducted into Canton this weekend, immortalized into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Still waiting for Tommy. No good? Okay, Tommy Lasorda needs 5 more minutes. So in the meantime, we'll talk a little bit about Frank Gifford. As I said, a great sports broadcaster, a great football Hall of Famer. He's born in Santa Monica, California. He graduated from Bakersfield High School. He was unable to gain an athletic scholarship to the University of Southern California due to his low grade point average. Undeterred, he played a season for Bakersfield Junior College, making the junior All-American team. There he made the grades needed to enroll at University of Southern California. At USC, Frank was named All-American athlete and player, and he graduated in the class of 1952. In 1951, he ran for 841 yards on 195 carries. In his NFL career, he began, of course, his NFL career with the New York Giants, playing both ways, playing offense and defense. He made 8 Pro Bowl appearances, 5 trips to the NFL championship game. Frank's biggest season, probably 1956, when he won the Most Valuable Player Award in the National Football League. He led the Giants to the NFL title over the Chicago Bears. He lost 18 months in the prime of his career when he was laid out by a hard tackle. People may remember that during a 1960 game against the Philadelphia Eagles, he was knocked out by Chuck Bednarik on a passing play. Unbelievable hit by Chuck Bednarik. He suffered a head injury that led him to retire from football in 1961. However, Frank returned to the Giants in 62. He He changed positions from running back to wide receiver, which was then known as a flanker position. His Pro Bowl selections came at three different positions, defensive back, running back, and wide receiver. He retired again, this time for good, in 1964 after making the Pro Bowl as a receiver. During his 12 seasons with the Giants, which encompassed 136 regular season games, Frank had 3,609 rushing yards, 34 touchdowns in 840 carries. He also had 367 receptions for 5,434 yards and 43 touchdowns. He completed 29 of the 63 passes he threw for 823 yards and 14 touchdowns with 6 interceptions. The 6 interceptions is tied with Walter Payton for most thrown by a non-quarterback in NFL history, while the 14 touchdowns is the most among any non-quarterback in NFL history. He appeared himself as a guest star on the NBC television series Hazel, which is pretty important. Hazel was a great woman, very attractive. Hazel and the Halfback was the name of that episode. It originally aired December 26, 1963. He was interested in investing in a local bowling alley in that story. I don't know why I told you that, but it's listed here. And it's not a very important fact, but figured you might want to know that. He was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame on July 30th, 1977, immortalized in Canton. He was a board member for the Lott Impact Trophy, which is named after Ronnie Lott, given annually to the college football's Defensive Impact Player of the Year. Now, taking a look at Frank's broadcasting career, after his playing days ended, Frank became a commentator mainly for NFL games on CBS. His big break came in 1971 when he replaced Keith Jackson as play-by-play announcer on ABC's Monday Night Football, joining Howard Cosell and Don Meredith, the famous trio, and he would continue on as commentator until 1997. A controversy over an affair with an airline stewardess, many people remember that, unfortunately, Susan Johnson, resulted in a reduced role on the pregame show in 1998, after which Gifford left Monday Night Football. During the 80s, Gifford would fill in for Al Michaels, who would replace Gifford on the play-by-play in 1986, whenever Michaels went on baseball assignments for the league championship series, such as 86 and 88, or World Series in 87 and 89. Gifford was also host of the British TV network, Channel 4, in the UK's NFL coverage with British-born New England Patriots kicker John Smith in 86 and 87. His non-football assignments, he also served as a reporter and commentator on other ABC programs, such as their coverage of the Olympic Games, perhaps most notably the controversial men's basketball game, the gold medal match between the United States and the Soviet Union at the 72 Olympic Games in Munich, that controversial game between the U.S. and the Russians, skiing and golf, and he's guest-hosted Good Morning America on occasion. He met his wife, Kathy Lee, while filling in as Good Morning America host in 1995. And he has given the Pete Rozelle Award by the Pro Football Hall of Fame for his NFL television work. He's also announced Evel Knievel's jumps for ABC's Wide World of Sports in the 1970s, including when Knievel failed to clear 13 buses at Wembley Stadium in 1975. We all remember that, of course, I'm sure. In 1995, Gifford and his wife, Kathy Lee, appeared on an episode of Coach, starring Craig T. Nelson. The episode was titled The Day I Met Frank Gifford. That aired on February 28, 1995. It featured Gifford accepting an award in New York, during which the uncouth defensive coordinator of the Minnesota State Screaming Eagles, Luther Horatio Van Dam, that, of course, was Jerry Van Dyke, plots to find a way to meet the former football star. Throughout the show, Luther recounts a college game he played against Gifford, which the USC running back knocked out one of Luther's teeth as he attempted to tackle the All-American star. Luther subsequently sent the tooth to Gifford many years later, with Gifford remembering the tooth guy as a real sicko. So that's another episode. That and Hazel will live in infamy and for time in memoriam, I'm sure. In 1977, Gifford appeared as himself in the episode The Shortest Yard of the ABC situation comedy The San Pedro Beach Bums, and of course we all remember that one as well. Looking again at Frank's personal life, Frank and Kathy Lee were married in 1986. They lived in Greenwich, Connecticut with Cody and Cassidy. They shared a birthday, August 16th. They appeared as hosts together for the 1988 Winter Olympics in Calgary. Gifford and his first wife, Maxine, had three children, Jeff, Kyle, and Victoria, five grandchildren. His daughter, Victoria, married Michael Lemoyne Kennedy, a member of the Kennedy family. And in 1997, the Globe arranged to have Gifford secretly videotaped, and that whole meth thing was a mess. We have Tommy with us? All right, Tommy Lasorda is with us now. He's a two-time NL Manager of the Year, two-time World Series champion. He had his number two retired by the Los Angeles Dodgers. He's won an Olympic gold medal. He's about as great an ambassador for the game of baseball as you've ever find. Voted into the Hall of Fame in 1997. I welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Tommy Lasorda. Tommy, welcome.
Thank you very much.
It's great to have you with us. The people in New York looking forward to hearing from you tonight.
Happy to be here.
Tommy, now you signed with the Phillies as an undrafted free agent in 1945, but...
We didn't have the draft in those days.
Undrafted free agent, right. You chose to go into the Army instead. How does going into the Army fit into your career as an honor?
Well, I had played 1 year professional baseball, and then I was drafted in where I made the last draft and spent almost 2 years in the Army.
Okay. Now, you returned to baseball in 1948. You had you went up to Schenectady, which the folks here know. Now, you struck out 25 Amsterdam Rubmakers in a 15-inning game. That was a professional record, since broken. You remember that day, Tommy?
Sure, I remember very well, sure.
Now, the next two starts, you struck out 15 and 13, and that's what got the attention of the Dodgers, correct?
Right. I struck out 25, 15, and 13 in three successive starts. Yeah.
Amazing.
That gave me a total of 53 strikeouts.
Not too bad. Not too bad. Now, you made your major league debut. Let's see. That was on August 5th, 1954 for Brooklyn.
That's right.
And you did. You got yourself a World Series ring as a member of the 55 Brooklyn Dodgers.
Right. That was part of it, yes.
And how'd you feel about that?
Well... I always feel great when things happen good to you.
Certainly.
Since I've been in the game, everything's gone well.
Now, your brief tenure with the Denver Bears, you were influenced by Ralph Houk. Talk a little bit about Ralph.
Ralph Houk was one of the greatest managers I played for. He was a ball player's manager. And I'll tell you something else. He should be in the Hall of Fame. He's been very, very successful as a manager in the major leagues over a period of years. And he was a hero in the military in the Second World War.
The major, exactly. Definitely.
Well, he received a commission on an area. Just like that, we went from a private to a major.
Sure. Now,
of course, that's why they call him major.
Definitely. Now, there's a lot of talk, Tommy, about the Dodger way, the attitude towards players and the game. Talk to us a little about the Dodger way, what that means to you.
Well, the Dodger way means that you got to be proud of your organization. You got to play for the name on the front of your shirt and not for the name on the back of your shirt. You got to give. You got to be part of a team. Everybody, every team you play for, you all pull for the same thing. You play for, as I said, for the name on the front of your shirt and not the name on the back.
That's a great way to put it. Now, you had some great ball players during those great days with the Dodgers. You had the 30 home run quartet of Garvey, Say, Smith, and Dusty Baker. The great infield of Garvey, Lopes, Bill Russell, and Ron Say. Talk a little bit about those days with the Dodgers and some of those great ball players.
Well, you know, that was one of the most outstanding teams that I've seen in all the years of the major leagues. Those guys were great. But, you know, those same guys the year before, we finished with a big margin behind the Cincinnati Reds in 76. We said, I think we finished about 10 games behind them.
Mm-hmm.
They had a powerhouse. When I come in as manager, I immediately created a rivalry between us and Cincinnati. And I said, I told them I don't want anybody coming in the clubhouse with anything red on. I hate the color red. I hate the Cincinnati Reds, and you're going to hate them too. And by golly, we beat them by 12 games.
You sure did. Yeah. You did a great job, Tommy. Definitely. We're talking to the great Tommy Lasorda tonight. Now, how about the rivalry against the Yankees? Now, I know you probably don't want to talk about it, but what about that job that Jackson did against the Dodgers?
Yeah, well, I remember that, but nobody remembers that when we played them, we hit into five double plays. We should have had about 11 runs, and the third baseman was making plays out of his back pocket.
Right.
I couldn't believe with the way he was playing and turning into double plays. We had a chance to score 12 runs.
Exactly, yeah. Nobody remembers that.
That really hurt us. That's what changed the whole game.
Exactly.
The third baseman.
Nettles.
And they weren't just routine ground balls either.
No.
They were hard hit balls to his left and to his right. And he come up with each one of them and turned them into double plays.
One of the greatest moments, Tommy, had to be Gibson's home run off Eckersley.
That was very exciting. You know, it was one of the most exciting moments of my life and my career in baseball. And this guy came to me and told me he could hit, and I put him up there, and he didn't have to run because I couldn't put him up before two outs because he couldn't run.
Right.
And this guy hit the ball out of the ballpark and one of the most dramatic wins in World Series history.
Definitely. And one of the greatest moments ever. You're exactly right. Now, two guys you had playing for you, Mike Socia and Dusty Baker. Could you tell they'd make great skippers themselves?
Well, both of them had the ability, that's for sure, when they played for me. Because they all used to question why I did this and why I did that. They wanted to know why this was this and whatever that was happening. And so, you know, they were interested in their future of being managers. And both of them did receive that title, and both of them did so well.
They certainly did. Now, of all those moments we mentioned, Tommy, maybe there's another one we didn't talk about. What was the greatest thrill for you?
Well, the greatest thrill for me was when I was made the manager of the Dodgers. I worked hard, very hard, in the minor league system in hopes and prayed that I would get the job of that. I turned
You had many offers while under Walt Alston to take other jobs too.
Yes, I did, and I turned them all down. I'll give you one example. Montreal offered me a 3-year contract, $50,000, $75,000, and $125,000. That totaled $250,000 in my books.
Yeah.
So I turned it down, and when I turned it down, I was coaching third base for the Dodgers and making $17,000 a year.
Right.
People thought I was crazy turning it down. But I wanted to get the Dodger job.
That was the dream for you, certainly. Yeah, I hear you.
All those players on a team played for me in the minor leagues.
Two guys in the Hall of Fame, Tommy, Gil Hodges and Mike Piazza. Both I feel belong there. I'd like to hear what you think about it.
Well, no doubt about it. Gil Hodges was tremendous. This is a thing I cannot understand, how he has never, ever gotten into this thing. Let me give you an example. I was on the committee where we compared first basemen, Gil Hodges and Tony Perez, for
example. Exactly. Yeah, that's a good point.
Tony Perez played four or five more years than Hodges did, and all their numbers were about almost equal. And Perez had played 5 years more than Hodges. And just think what would have happened if Hodges had played five more years.
Exactly. Now the specter hangs over the head of Mike. Now you have Bill Madden, who unfairly accuses guys like Jeff Bagwell, Mike Piazza, with no proof at all. Now Mike should get in next year. As a Met fan, I hope he does unabashedly. I root for the guy.
What he's accomplished. He's hit more home runs than any catcher in the history of baseball.
Exactly.
And he was the 62nd draft, and went and made the major leagues, and he had me worked hard to get here.
And he certainly deserves it. And talking about scoreless innings, Tommy, you have Don Drysdale, you have Oral Hershiser, you have Clayton Kershaw, all Dodgers. Is that a coincidence?
Well, that tells you what kind of organization we are.
Exactly. Yeah, it can't be a coincidence, can it?
It's the greatest organization in baseball. I never wanted to leave it. And here I am. This is my 66th year with the Dodgers.
How did you enjoy the induction this year? I was up there this year, Tommy. Certainly deserving. Were Biggio, Smoltz, Pedro, and Randy Johnson. We had great weather. How did you enjoy going up to Cooperstown this year?
Well, I always enjoy it, seeing guys that you hadn't seen in a while. But sometimes those speeches get too long. and the guys that have been through it complain about it, you know. Because I know when I was ready to go up and speak, those guys said, "Hey, Tommy, not too long."
Especially when you have to listen to four of them, right, Tommy?
Yeah, those were the old-time players that were getting on me to make sure I didn't stay up there all day.
Yeah, Smoltz was a little long-winded, wasn't he?
I thought so.
Yeah. I hear you. So tell us what Tommy's doing these days.
Well, I'm still with the Dodgers. I travel to our minor leagues, work with the players there, and do a lot of public speaking for the Dodgers. And that's what I'm doing. I'm enjoying it very, very much. And come September, I will be 88 years old.
And as I said, Tommy, you're one of the greatest ambassadors that that baseball has. Where does the gold medal fit in as far as thrills for you,
well,
Tommy?
You know, people think I'm crazy when I said winning the gold medal was more important than winning a World Series. And people said, "What, are you crazy?" I said, "No, I'm not crazy." I said, "The Dodgers win the World Series. The people in L.A. are happy, but the people in Cincinnati aren't. The people in San Diego aren't. But you win that Olympic. Now you're doing it for your country."
Exactly. Everybody's, good point.
Everybody's happy.
Good point.
Cincinnati, San Diego, anywhere in the country, they're all proud of you.
Good point. Good point, Tommy. Well, I tell you, it's been a real pleasure. It's been an honor having you with us tonight, talking about your great Hall of Fame career. Check out Tommy's new book, folks. It's called My Way. It's from our friends out at Triumph Books in Chicago. Tommy, I really appreciate taking time out of your Sunday night to be with us.
Okay, and remember, I'll tell you this, get that book. You'll
exactly.
Like it.
My Way, Triumph Books, Amazon. Folks, check it out. Tommy Lasorda, ladies and gentlemen. Next up, we'll talk to one of the 69 Miracle Mets. Ron Swoboda will join us after the break, folks, on Sports Talk 1240. Stay with us.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA, or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
All right, we're back with Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB Freeport, New York. Bill Donahue with you. I hope you had a great weekend. Beautiful summer weather. Both baseball teams in first place, despite a little slide over the weekend. Yankees swept by Toronto. Mets dropped 2 out of 3 to the Tampa Bay Rays. I'm heading up to the Hoops Hall in Springfield tomorrow to see an old friend of the show. The great Dikembe Mutombo will be up there as part of their 60 Days of Summer program. I hope you're enjoying Sports Talk 1240 tonight. Well, my next guest is a former Major League outfielder, best known as a member of the 1969 Miracle Mets. His catch of drive off the bat of Brooks Robinson in right field at Shea Stadium in the 1969 series, well, it's gone down as one of the greatest in series history. He, along with his teammates, will forever strike a sentimental chord in the heart of Mets fans who remember that 69 season. I welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Ron Swoboda. Ron, good evening.
Nice to have you, man. How are you doing?
All right, Ron. I was very interestingly watching the results of the Zephyrs game during the last hour, making sure that things would be finished in time.
Yeah, we just got it in. It took a while because it was a 12-7 ball game that we lost. We were way behind, got a five-run inning, got our noses back in it, but we're playing one of the better teams in the leading team in our division. And if you're watching what's going on in Florida with the Marlins, they're starved for pitching with injuries and trades. And they just they siphoned all of our starting pitching away. So we're starting double-A guys who've never pitched at the triple-A level before and just lost 4 out of 5 to Round Rock, the number one team. So yeah, we're getting what we deserve. And, unfortunately, it happened again tonight. But,
let's
talk about the Mets, although,
I was disappointed. They dropped 2 out of 3 to the Rays, which, I figure they're about due for their collapse, so.
Well, I don't know about collapses, but you're not gonna get the great pitching all the time, but when you score early and jump out and something like they did in the last two that they lost, and Syndergaard is one of them. Cologne, you're not so sure about, because you wonder how he does it anyway, but I think Syndergaard coughing it up quite so quickly after he had a 3-run lead was a little hard to take. But I'm not worried about the kid. If he's healthy, we're fine.
Yeah, he'll be all right. Now let's get to you, Ron. Now you spent one season in Williamsport before you made the team in '65. Right away, you walk into Casey Stengel. Now that's got to be a little bit of a shock. Now tell us a little bit about Casey.
Well, you know what? I don't know how many people really understand Casey Stengel. he comes from a different, not just a different century, but a whole different culture in baseball. You know, I always joke about those guys that played in the big leagues before they invented penicillin were real men, and Casey Stengel was, he came to the big leagues in like 1912 or something like that, and with the Brooklyn Dodgers and was a right fielder, which I didn't wholly appreciate when I first met him actually in 1964, because my first year at spring training in 1964, the Mets brought in a bunch of their young talent, Tug McGraw, his brother Hank McGraw, Dick Selma, guys like that who came in, Rob Gardner, and, guys that were the future of the team, they thought, to an early spring training up ahead of Major League spring training at the Major League camp in St. Petersburg, Florida, Huggins Stengel Field.
Right.
Can you imagine you walk out there on a diamond that's named after the manager of the team you're playing for? And you start getting a little whiff of what this guy Stengel is all about. And he was incredible. I hung on every word. Stengelese to me made all the sense in the world. You'd see him, he would sometimes speak in parables. Because he loved to entertain the writers. He spent a lot of time with the writers. I think he understood wholly that his job with an expansion team back in that day, when the expansion team was getting, has-beens and never will-bes, to work with, that he was going to, his job was to keep the writers from turning on the franchise. And nobody could have done a better job than Casey Stengel. You would see him talking to them, and he would start. He'd be telling them a story about something that happened 45 or 50 years ago when he was playing, and it would be a story about something that he wanted you to understand
parable that he wanted me to hear, and you could see a little glint in his eye every once in a while when he saw me listening in, because when he went on those runs with the writers, I was listening in, and it was magic to be around the guy, and it's only gotten better as I've gotten older. I'm the same age as Stengel was when he took over the Mets. That's you know, when I played for him in 1965.
But you don't have a face that looks like it'll hold 2 days' rain, though, like Casey did.
It looked like it came off a Rushmore, didn't it?
Yeah.
But you know what? If you stood next to him, you looked in those blue eyes were young. His eyes were alive and young, and that guy, you know, that guy, his brain was dancing with fun. I'll tell you that. You know, for a guy that had seen as much as he had seen, his eyes were fresh and young, man. And you know, for him to be able to function the way he functioned with a team that had no chance was remarkable to me. And to keep it fun and keep the writers from turning, you know, on the players and the franchise.
That's
he
amazing.
Was the only guy that could have really done that.
Amazing, yeah, truly. And then your first time in the majors, Ron, you hit a couple of home runs. The first one was off. I did my homework. Turk Farrell. 11th inning home run off Turk Farrell.
It was the seventh inning of a ball game we were behind in. I pinch it and hit a home run. I've got the scorecard at home.
Okay.
So it was the seventh inning or so late in the game we were behind against Houston. And it went over the second wall at Shea Stadium. So not only is Turk Farrell going from this earth, but so is Shea Stadium.
Exactly. Now the next one. And you hit one in your first at bat a couple of days later off a Hall of Famer. You remember who it was?
No.
Gaylord Perry.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've forgotten that. I hit 15 home runs the first half of that season. I hit more home runs in the first half of the season when I was playing for Casey Stengel than I ever did in a whole year with anybody else in the big league. How about that?
Yeah, I think you have the Met record for home runs before the All-Star break by a Mets rookie.
Well, if that's a record, that's the only one I got because I had a couple of other things that were broken. Daryl Strawberry broke my rookie home run record of 19, and then I think Justin Turner broke a record for pinch hits in a row. Something of that sort, one of those obscure little things, and I got to tell Justin Turner, who should still be a Met, but regrettably is not. I told him, I said, thanks a lot, Justin. I said, until you broke my record, nobody even knew I had one.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all right. No, that's cool. Way to go, man.
Yeah,
he's one of my favorite players.
Another one that slipped through the cracks.
I hate the beards. Do women like that? Why are they doing that?
I don't know.
Do women like those guys with those beards? Is it like those morons on Duck Dynasty? Do they hate them?
Ron Darling and Keith Hernandez were just talking about that today, saying, I don't know how these guys do it in the heat, you know, with the beards. They could never do
it. I hate
them. Yeah.
I really hate them. I mean, you know, is it House of David? What is this going
on?
Yeah,
House of David, exactly,
mind?
Yeah.
You know, no, really nice guys, really good-looking guys, nice guys, wear beards, and they look hideous. I just don't understand the image. And, you know, in an age when image is so important, it's so completely important today, in fact, it's more important than reality sometimes in this day and age, and they're doing that. I don't get it.
No. Beyond me.
Anyway.
We're speaking to Ron Swoboda tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Now, you get through the rough Wes Westrum years. There's another enigma.
That was his nickname, right? Nappy?
No. Why was that?
I think because he always looked like he was half asleep.
Yeah. He was a unique personality.
Well, he's totally unsuited as a manager, but here's the deal.
he could call pitches as good as anybody. He could pick pitches. You know, he could read pitches on pitchers. Almost as good as Sean Green, a former Met, who made it a science to bring it, you know, closer to contemporary times. But Wes Westrum called a lot of home runs for Willie Mays when he was a coach with the Giants.
Is that right? Yeah. Well,
yep.
I guess he was more valuable than I thought. Then, yeah, okay. Well,
you're just. You know, you're looking at what you can grab, but, you know, there's a reason why he was in the game over here, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, he stuck around a long time. You're right, Ron.
Yep.
So we move to 69. Gil comes in. I think the Mets really, Ron, they're socially relevant as to what's happening in the country at the time. Yeah, you have the moon landing. You have what's happening in Vietnam. You have Woodstock, and you have the Mets. Talk a little bit about that.
It was, and I'm writing this chapter in my memoir to come, okay, because I thought if you started looking at 68 and 69, you know, they're kind of looking at the 70s on CNN right now, and that's
right.
A wonderful piece of history. It's a wonderful piece of history. But if you look back at 1968-69, it was an age when everything seemed possible. You know, the war was feeding the economy. The economy was zooming, and you had the war and anti-war and this this sort of age of Aquarius, love in. You know, what do you mean? Do I love you? I love everybody that led to Woodstock and led to. You know, the economy was great, so you had kids coming right out of college and going anti-war and starting communes and, you know, that sort of failed social experiment that changed us for a while, I think. It changed us for a while because I loved the love children. I loved them. I thought that was an amazing reaction to the war. And if you had a bad economy, or you have an economy today where kids in college, if you're not interning in a big corporation or a corporation somewhere, by the time you're a junior, your chances of employment are a lot slimmer. So you're forcing people into the economy and to think adult a lot sooner than they did back then. So it was very different in that regard. You could drop out. You could take a year off, and a business was so good if you had a decent degree. Employment was easy back then. Good jobs for good pay, not like today.
Right. So we had the Mets and the Cubs that summer. We had Goodbye Leo. We had Seaver's Imperfect Game. We had the Black
Leo.
Cat.
How about Leo? Yeah. Leo, he invented baseball. He had a four-man rotation and played all that day, and then wonders why his team kind of flattened out. Never had a center fielder. Leo thought he could outthink Gil Hodges.
Right.
That was never going to happen, ever.
Now, we had the Black Cat, Ron. Now, I was up in Cooperstown 2 weeks ago. I spoke to Fergie Jenkins. I asked him about the Black Cat. Fergie says the groundkeeper put it there. Talk about the Black Cat.
Well, I'll tell you what. I wish I knew the groundskeeper because I would have given him a World Series share. I would have lobbied for him to get off a World Series share. But you tell me then, you don't train a cat. And you know, as far as I know, I guess they can, within certain limits, be trained or behave because they use them in commercials. But I'll tell you what, this cat was crazed and didn't know what was up. And when it ran out into the lights of Shea Stadium, it was completely berserk. And the amazing thing is, it took a left turn. It came out from behind home plate and took a left turn right in front of the dugout and ran back and forth. Totally black cat. And, you know, I don't believe in that kind of crap. But it was funny as hell.
It was certainly great theater, wasn't it? Yeah.
Well, in a series of games that we played against the Cubs. Now we won the season series against the Cubs by what would look like comfortable margins. But if you looked at every game, each game seemed to break on one or two things. Call it home, a play in the outfield that the center fielder didn't make for the Cubs. Just something would happen all the time, and we would win them by just one or two happenings, just one or two circumstances, things going on. They were tight games, even though we won the season series. So it was, you know, in the midst of all of that and as tight and as tense as those games were, here comes a black cat running out at home in Shea Stadium in front of these guys who can't seem to find a break. And now the black cat runs out there and goes, I'll show you why.
Yeah.
You're getting all the bad luck. Your luck is all bad.
Right. Oh, boy. Yeah. That,
cool.
That
crazy
was it.
Stuff. You know,
yeah.
You couldn't make stuff like that happen. You couldn't make that. You know?
Exactly.
Like when the guy, you look, when they landed on the moon, we were stuck in Montreal. We had airplane trouble. Our United Airlines charter had a mechanical problem. So, you know, the Mets, all of us, we repaired to the bar. What else would you do? We went to the bar in the airport, and that's where we watched them walk. That's where we watched Neil Armstrong take, you know, that giant leap for mankind. And otherwise we would have not seen it live. It was incredible. And the irony was not lost on us. Here's a guy on the moon, and we can't get back from Montreal to New York.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, and you know, here's the other thing. Really, 68 kind of melts into 69. The end of 68, I went to Vietnam and did a USO tour. I wanted to go and show these troops who were largely conscripted that somebody gave a crap about them. And so we went. Joe DiMaggio, Ernie Banks went over there, Bowie Kuhn, before he was commissioner of baseball. He was the favorite to become the next commissioner. The commissioner was a military guy. You know, think about this.
General Eckert, yeah.
Colonel Eckert, the unknown soldier. We can't win in Vietnam, but the owners hire General Eckert to be the commissioner of baseball.
Yeah.
He knows nothing about the game of baseball. He might know a little something about organizing running large organizations, but he knew nothing about baseball. We had a vote not to play the day after they killed Robert Kennedy and Dr. Martin Luther King. We had to make a vote as players to keep them from putting us on the field.
Right.
And Eckert was was tone deaf to that public relations part of it. And I'm proud that it was the players that did that. But it's funny, you hear that they hired Eckert because he had no enemies amongst the owners. Well, 3 years into his 6-year contract, they fired him because he had no friends. Okay?
Yeah, pretty anyway. Good.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the platoon. Speaking of the Army, I had Artie on a couple of weeks ago. Now he said
he said one of my best friends.
He said right out he hated it.
Yes, you know what? He's a good hitter, and I can understand that. You know, he wanted to play against everybody. I wanted to play as much as I could, and really, if you look at our platoon in right field, we drove in 100.
Right.
You know, Artie, for a little skinny kid, you know.
He had some power.
He had pop. You know, he wiggled his butt, and you know, he had a great set of hands, and he got the head of the bat to the ball quickly. He had a good swing, really nice swing.
didn't have any muscle, you know?
Yeah.
He ran like an old guy with sore feet. But he could hit. And you know, he was a guy that, you know, he could pinch hit. You know, he hit 4 home runs in a row over a 2-game span. Not many guys did that.
Right, he did, yeah.
And we hung around. You know, we hung around. I love Art Shamsky, and to this day, I enjoy when I can spend a few moments.
Good man, yeah.
Him and Ed Cranepool and Cleon Jones and those guys, you know, Kuzman when he comes to town, you know, Seaver when you get a chance to be around him, you know, it's a joy.
The old gang, yeah. The it was some bunch.
Well, you know, I think we feel like a small club that in one sparkling period of time got to do something. It took everybody to do it, even though you don't do it without a Seaver, you don't do it without a Kuzman, you don't do it without a Don Clendenin or Cleon Jones, you know, having those kinds of years. The rest of us were like guys, you know, most of a championship team, most of anybody's championship team are just guys who can do a few things here and there. Kenny Boswell and McGrane, you know, Ed Charles, you know, all the platooning we did on that team was really a source of strength, and Hodges used it to a T. You know, they put you in more situations where you could succeed, and you keep guys resting. When you need a pinch hitter, you play a little bit. You haven't been sitting there for 2 weeks doing nothing where the game is too fast for you.
And you don't do it without Ron Swoboda making a catch off the bat of Brooks Robinson.
Well, I'll tell you what. Maybe in the World Series, you can try to figure out what else I should have done on that fly ball. All I knew how to do was get to it as fast as I could, and I didn't have to get there. You know, I mean, that is the truth. But I did, and I don't think a whole lot about what would have happened if I didn't. Maybe that big fat-ass Boog Powell would have scored. I doubt it. He's got to hold up, and he's got to hold up between first and second to see if I caught the ball. Now, you know, because I was close enough to it, so he can't be running too far. He ran an awful lot in the same spot anyway. So, I don't know if he's going to score, but he had a chance to score. And if I don't make the out, he's at least at third base, I think only one out.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of different things could have happened. And that's right in the middle of the World Series. We lose that game. If they score big in that inning and we lose that game, the series is tied at 2.
Right.
I don't think you want to let that bunch of Orioles in the door, you know?
No, not that close.
I don't think you want to give them a reprieve. I don't.
No, you want to step on their neck and end
yeah,
it.
Yeah, until you hear something pop.
Yep. We're speaking with Ron Swoboda tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Now, how did you feel about getting traded to the Expos, Ron?
I ran my big mouth and asked for it, which was one of the more stupid things I ever did as a player. But I was upset. And you know what? Emotions can cut both ways. My emotions got the best of me. I was angry, disappointed. I ended up saying some stuff that was stupid beyond the pale. You make yourself a problem, and you're not big enough star to do that sort of thing. You know, it's kind of like your mouth. Your mouth is running up a bill. You know, your butt can't pay. Or you pay for it by getting traded. That was such a stupid thing, you know, and almost as stupid as me maybe more so and not getting along with Hodges. I had and I still have today. I have a problem with authority. I don't trust authority. For some reason I have a problem with it. And there's only an occasion where authority has to prove itself to sort of a kind of classic attitude, but I'm stuck with it. And I bristled around Hodges when in truth, all these years later, if I would have just shut my damn mouth and done what he wanted me to do, I would have been immeasurably better. Okay? The Mets are going to do what they're going to do, but it would have been better for me if I could have just shut.
I hear you, Ron. Yeah, well, a lot of us feel that way about things in the past. We would have been better off if we kept our mouths shut. Yeah.
But, you know, it's like that kid Flores with the Mets, you know. I was never good at anything that I wasn't invested in emotionally. Understand?
Yeah.
When he was crying out there on the field and people are yelling out there, he's traded, and the kid is breaking down because he's been a Met since he's 16. And then he comes in a night or so later and hits a walk-off. I got to see him last weekend, and I walked up to him, and that's exactly what I said. I said, never be afraid of your emotion back then. I wore this number 4 before you were born, and I said I was never good at anything, that I wasn't emotionally invested in. And I said, what you did, the way you brought it back was awesome. And I said, you found out this building cares about you a little bit. And another thing I said, this race is on, and you guys are in it. And that will take care of everything else.
Great story, Ron. Well, I'll tell you, it's been a real pleasure having you with us tonight. Thanks for taking the time. Everyone's
anytime.
Been looking forward to hearing from you, and it's been a real pleasure. Ron Swoboda, folks.
Hey,
thanks,
psyched,
Ronnie.
Man. Go Mets.
Thanks
go
a
Mets
lot, players. Ronnie. You take care. That'll do it for me tonight on Sports Talk 1240. I'd like to thank my guests, Tommy Lasorda and Ron Swoboda, and you for joining us. Stay tuned for hour number 2 with Raymond Mora up next on Sports Talk 1240. I'll be back with you Sunday night, August 23rd, with the great musician Warren Haynes. Till then, Bill Donahue wishing you a good evening, folks.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.